Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe. You are straight out of Castello, Norado, of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
And I'm Julia Fox, that girl.
No arguments there. This week, big guest episode, Julia Fox, on our original list. Like, what people don't know, when we started this, we had a wish list.
Yep. About a year ago, we started this show.
Wish list.
And we said, you might have been like, it was like Barack Obama, Julia Fox.
Yeah.
It was like
our
dream
genuinely.
Guests.
That's amazing.
Because for us, we want people who touch various corners of culture. Yeah. We want people who show up in a lot of places, who can talk educatedly and informedly about a lot of different stuff. So right off rip, phenomenal.
Yeah. And your resume has only gotten longer in the year that we've been doing this show.
I know. Crazy.
So you've been doing your fashion show on E. You're a video podcast veteran.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there. You have a new song.
Yeah.
Down the Drain, named for the title of your memoir.
Yep.
Came out last year and recently appeared in the music video for Charlie XCX's 360 as that girl.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
I'm
like,
that girl.
So all these things are connected, but you seem to have been doing music lately. Like, first, just give us the backstory of the Charlie song, because she also mentions you in the track.
You're just looking at me. I'm everywhere. I'm so Julia. You're in the party, bumping that beat. 666 with the princess streak. I'm everywhere. I'm so Julia.
Did you know her previously? How did she play this for you?
No, I think that she had already been working on this song when we were still kind of just like acquaintances.
Okay.
But I always knew that she, you know, thought highly of me because, you know, she would say it in interviews and stuff. And I would reciprocate because I've always been a huge fan of her. Like, I think she just makes people feel good. And that's amazing. And I also just like love British girls. Like, they're really down to earth. They don't take themselves too seriously. They have a really good sense of humor. Whereas I feel like Americans are a lot more sensitive and like passive aggressive. Like British people kind of just tell you what it is.
And, okay.
You know, like even the way they talk to each other, they'll be like, yeah, you know, it's like if they did that here, it'd be like, oh, you want to fight? You know, like it's just like.
Great.
Also, the fighting in England doesn't actually have anything to do with how they talk to each other.
Yeah.
They're just fighting.
They're just fighting for fun, which is also such a vibe.
Yeah.
Anyway, I loved her, and she told me she was gonna shout me out in this song, and then asked me to be in the video, and obviously I said yes.
What about her? Oh, Charlie, that's literally Julia Fox.
Yeah, sorry.
Did you know it was going to be this table
all star team?
Yeah, like a.
I didn't really know anything
through the years.
Yeah, I didn't know anything, but I was, you know, I trust her. I trust her vision, and whatever she wants to do, I'm down.
So you didn't like show up to the table, and you're like, oh, I'm beefing with. So and so.
No. I don't, and I like don't beef with girls. Like girls can beef with me, but I'm not going to beef back with them. Like it's no.
Was there anyone in that video? Because obviously over the years, I'm sure you've had opportunities
to work with them.
Right. Yeah. Is there a particular person or one or two people who you were like, I'm so relieved to see that person here. That person makes me feel much more comfortable about this entire
experience. Well, I love Chloe Cherry. I had her on my podcast
like
2 years ago. I love Rachel Sennett. We both had our big breakout roles in the same year. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what award show we were at, but we like met at that award show and we were both like, you know, just nobodies at the time. And so it's really cool to meet there and then meet again, you know, now that we've both come so far. And that's always really amazing. I love Gabriette. Mm-hmm. Been a huge fan of hers. I mean, you know, obviously Richie, Shazam, mm-hmm. but you know,
but that's,
like,
that's my
best
lead.
Yeah, so Richie, like, you know, that's a given. But like, yeah, everyone was amazing.
And then, Chloe shows up, right? Yeah. As the sort of,
well, I wasn't there that day.
Oh, it was a different day.
Yeah, different.
She wasn't at the table.
Yeah.
With you,
so a right? lot of the girls I didn't even see at all.
Right.
But it's still cool to be in the same video.
Do you think in terms of lineage, because obviously one of the things about that video that really jumps out at me is it's really, there's your timeline, there's your lineage, it girl lineage timeline. Yeah. So when you're looking at yourself as part of that, how does it, like, how does it make you feel? Do you look at someone from the Chloe 70 generation and think like, okay, that's a path for how I can be in the world, how I can move through the world?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I think Chloe was, like, you know, one of the first, like, it girls that could be represented on the internet, you know, because Kids was such an amazing mm-hmm. movie. And you know, to be even in the same conversation as an icon like that is, like,
were you thinking of yourself that way? even before this video, were you thinking of yourself with all the sort of steps that have led up to this?
I don't know, as like a role model type thing? Always kind of, like, just thought of myself more as, like, an anti it girl, mm. you know, like, I don't want to conform to, like, I don't know. I'm very, like, low key anti-establishment mm-hmm. and I don't like those, like, terms that can be coined and just, like, used to sell something. So I feel like I'm an anti-it girl, but
okay,
but still an it girl nonetheless.
Right. You can't fully run from
it can't beat the it girl allegations.
But no, you do have, like, a bob and weave quality to your career. Like, I feel like a lot of people were first introduced to you through Uncut Gems.
Mm-hmm. I told you about how things were gonna go. You like the way things are going now?
That's my family.
Book comes out a couple years after, and it seems like every time you, like, almost get, like, too big, then you swerve again. And like, and now we've landed at this music moment. Like, has that been a conscious effort to avoid, like, quote unquote, going Hollywood or
definitely
following a, whatever the path set for you by, like, a boardroom of agents and managers?
Definitely.
Like, what?
Because I think I just always want to be, like, more underground, or like, that's where I lean, because that's what I've always been, you know, kind of like in on the fringe and, like, in my own little subculture, and not really, like, the mainstream doesn't speak to me, and I don't think I speak to the mainstream. Like, I just don't think we're each other's audiences, you know?
But there was definitely a moment where it seemed like you could have gone in that direction. Like, I'm thinking of, like, a band or a pop star, like, do I sign to a major label or not?
Yeah.
Like, were there people who sat you down
always
and said, like, we can make
every
you
day
the next?
Yeah, like, here's the three-year plan if you want it, basically.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
start a makeup line. I'll invest in your makeup line. I'll invest in your clothing line. And it's like, I don't want to be out here selling to people in a world of, like, overconsumption and waste and, you know, just, it just doesn't inspire me. That's not what I am. I'm an artist, and I'm a tortured one at that. And I'd like to remain that way.
You also say something in the book that, I think it's maybe when you're telling your mother that you get the part and that you'd gotten the part in Uncut Gems, and you're sort of like, I'm going to be famous. And then you sort of, as an aside, say, like, I'm kind of like a hood celebrity already, but, like, this is different.
Yeah.
As that arc was happening, and then you're going into the rollout of the movie and the press and all that stuff, what was the sort of point where you realized, like, you're maybe less tethered to that grounding level of, like, local celebrity, hood celebrity, like, the people's champ? When did that, when did you start to feel distant from that?
I don't feel this
never
from
went.
That
and
at all.
You never felt like you got pulled too far away.
Or like it was slipping away. You're like, who am I and where am I?
No.
Really?
I'm in New York. I'm in the street.
You're outside?
No, they love me here. I literally can't walk down the street. So. Mm-hmm.
Were there offers, like, in the Uncut Gems aftermath, like, that were tempting to you to, like?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but the pandemic happened.
Yep.
Right.
A month after Uncut Gems came out.
Right.
So anything that I had on the table went away for 2 years. And then I had a baby.
Right.
And then I was kind of like, couldn't travel, couldn't do anything. So that's when I started the podcast, because I, like, needed something to do where I could be, like, safe and I wouldn't be contaminating anybody or putting my child at risk.
Sure.
And then.
So the choice was sort of made for you.
Yeah.
But
that
it was
changed everything.
Right. But it was the choice you would have made anyway, you think?
No, because I had moved to LA right after Uncut Gems and we had all these plans and I was going to do all these things. And then in March or February or whenever it was, when, like, I think everything shut down in February, but then it officially shut down in March.
Sure, March, yeah.
Yeah. Then I just came back home and got pregnant a month later.
What do you think that sliding doors moment would have been? Like, what did you foresee for yourself?
You know, I don't know, but I'm so happy it went down this way because I'm so happy I chose to become a mom right then and there, because really it would have been the only time that I could have dedicated to doing it and doing a really thorough job at it, because I had nothing else going on. Whereas now I'm traveling every other day and, you know, it's a constant headache of the travel plans for the baby, getting the nanny for the baby.
But your son appears in your new music video.
Yeah.
Do you try to keep those parts of your life separate, or you're all in?
I think that he, you know, I feel like parenting in America is like, it's like, it's really separate. Whereas like in Europe, for instance, it's very normal for a child to go everywhere with their parent, even if it's out late at night or even to a bar, it's not considered like, you know, and I feel like I want my child to be involved in all areas of my life. So anywhere that I can squeeze him in, I put him in. And okay, I think it's also good for him to like have that life experience and to feel comfortable and, you know, It's like, why not?
Right.
You know,
okay,
it's
so enriching. I'm taking notes. I'm doing no iPad, yes bars.
Yeah.
Yes, the Julia Fox method.
Well, it depends what bar. Yeah. You know?
The best bar.
If it's like a cute little tapas wine bar, sure, it's fine. But if, you know, obviously don't take them to the box. Like, yeah.
Babies at the box.
Babies at the box, no, don't do it.
I mean, there definitely are babies at the box, but they're like grown men dressed up in like a diaper. Yeah.
Do you feel like parenting and motherhood changed your relationship to adventure and impulsively going after? Because one of the things that comes up over and over again in the book is a willingness to sort of be like, I don't know where this road's going to go, but we're getting in the car and we're going spiritually or metaphorically. Yeah. How did parenting evolve that in you as a person?
I have to get my kicks some way, you know, like I don't party anymore. I'm literally with my kid 24/7. So, you know, I have to get my thrills through working. And so I'm always trying new things.
Sure.
And I never want to limit myself. But obviously now, like, I have to remain grounded because I have
responsibility,
a human that depends on me.
Yeah.
So I can't just like disappear or, you know, or like go on a crazy road trip or move to the bayou or whatever I've done in the past. Like I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. When you were putting all that stuff down in the book, I mean, one of the things, obviously, you've been documenting things for way before this book. You've been documenting things for a long time in your life. When you were sort of doing all the recollecting and putting it all here, did your perspective being 5 to 10 years older, looking back on some of that stuff, did your perspective change on it? Did you feel wistful? Did you feel regretful about how did you view the events that you're talking about?
I don't really regret anything because I'm a very big believer in like your path and your journey and your fate. And like, I always say that like out of the most horrible things, like the most beautiful things are born. So anytime anything happening to me, I know that once I have more pieces to the puzzle and I see the bigger picture, it'll make sense, you know. And I also think it's good to just have something to push against, you know, like it's good. It gives, if you're handed everything all the time, like it just kind of like makes life less desirable to live because you're not like, for me, like I always have to prove something and that's what I'm pushing against. So that's why maybe I do the most or like, you know, whatever, but that's just what keeps me going.
But also it does come up a few times in the book, how you'll have these encounters where you're like, I think these people, whoever they are not going to like me or no one's going to show up to the art gallery opening or so on and so forth. And then time and time again, you're proven wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of surprised because I would think certainly, like you say, like the queen of downtown, like, you know what I mean? At some point, maybe you would think, okay, they will show up. Okay, they do like me.
I don't think those voices ever go away.
Really?
No. Like, I still get stuff like that all the time. I just think, doesn't everyone though, like, have the like little voice in their head?
Sure. Like, or like, suck. This time is going to be the time that they know.
You've gotten really lucky this far, but this time it's over for you. Like, it's irrational. And I'll even be like, no, this is like super irrational. And like, the data proves that this is not possible, you know, but like, you still think it. It's like childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. It's hard to undo that if that's like how you were always made to feel. As like an outsider, like the black sheep, the underdog, the like weird one, whatever. It's like, it's hard to dismantle that. I think even you could have so much success and so much whatever, but I don't think that ever goes away.
Do you feel that like as an actress now, do you feel like you're on steady footing? Like, are you going on auditions? Yeah. Are you?
No,
like,
I'm working a lot. I'm filming a lot of movies.
Yeah. Like, do you feel like?
I feel good. I feel like, I think for a while it got a little crazy and I got a little, I don't know. I didn't like lose sight of myself, but like I lost a lot of weight and I was just like, I think I was just on a spiral. Like I was unwell, you know, I was like mourning the loss of the relationship with my son's father. I was dating people that I shouldn't have even been in the vicinity of. Like it was just, you know, and now I think I'm really back to a place where I feel like grounded again. And I feel like, okay, I'm reprioritizing. I know what I want to do. You know, I'm just like, you know, making more art, showing up for myself, eating properly, sleeping properly. But
acting is definitely part of that piece of a puzzle of what you want to do. Because I think it's interesting. Yeah. Like it's such a difficult position I'd imagine to be in where your breakout role is playing a version of yourself. Yeah. Like that's one thing. Like you're really good at being
Julia Fox.
And maybe a heightened version of yourself or a version of yourself from 3 years ago or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of you in that role, right? Yeah. Even though you write it, as you write in the book, like
it's actually harder to act like what you think the director's version of you is.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Like it was actually like so much harder. I was like, it's like, wait, who do you think I am?
Right.
You know, because obviously it really wasn't me.
Yeah. The looking glass. Yeah.
So I mean, it was definitely still acting and it was really, it just felt so weird because it's like so close to home, but then again, also not. And it's just like a weird space to be in.
But now you feel.
Now I do. Like at the time I was like, I'm not worthy. And now I'm like, no, I'm definitely worthy. You know, just because I didn't get my practice in acting roles doesn't mean that I didn't get them out in the world in real life, right, which I think is actually like stronger.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With generous welcome offers that include a 7-day free trial. Go to nytimes.com/free trial.
What do you have coming up that you're really excited about? Like,
I just got back from New Mexico last week. I was there for a month and shooting a film called Him. And it's a Jordan Peele Monkey Paw production. Right. It's like a psychological horror thriller film based on like American football. And I play
not the band.
This aging what?
Not the band American Football.
No, is that a band? No, I don't
like,
know.
I literally can't believe you said that. I actually cannot believe you said that.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. You know, once an emo kid, always an emo kid. I never thought we would mention the band American Football on a podcast with Julia Fox. Phenomenal. But here
great
we
band.
Are.
I love that. I'll have to check them out.
About a football player?
Yeah, about like an aging out football player. I play his wife.
Okay.
And he's recruiting the next you know, greatest of all time football player, but there's some shady dealings going on with the franchise and you'll just have to watch it.
What is it like to be on set now when you're not in the local scene? Like, you're not with people you've known, like you're not, I know obviously you've done stuff in
between.
Yeah,
I've done other stuff where it wasn't like, I mean, nothing will ever be like shooting on Ketchup. Sure. You know, because I was really there with all my friends in front of the camera and behind the camera. And it just, you know, and even as I was filming it, like all the hair and makeup team were like, girl, this is not what it's like. So don't get used to it. Like this.
And then you're like, Steven Soderbergh, here I am. I'm Julia Fox.
Yeah. But like everyone could tell that there was a really special vibe and energy on the set. And everyone knew that the film was going to be huge. And it was, you know, right. So I'm still trying to like top that or like be known for like something else that isn't that. But obviously it's so grateful. Like I'm so happy to be known for that. It's a huge honor.
I've got to imagine in Uncut Gems on some level, you know, you're playing someone's version of you, the real person. But then you're thinking, well, this version of me, many people will conflate with the actual me.
Yeah.
So you're being mindful and like sort of protective of the character maybe. And then also reverse protective of yourself. But if you're in someone else's vision altogether, it's probably more liberating, I would assume.
I think it's an evolution, but it still comes from the same place of just like wanting to release and, you know, finding different avenues, different channels to release. I think in the early aughts of my career, it was very much like unpacking and unloading my trauma.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm just like so over my trauma and my shit. I don't want to hear about it. Like I'm just no over it. Like there's got to be something more interesting, you know, even though somehow we always end up back there. I'm like, oh God, I've done so much since then. So, you know, it's different. It is an evolution though.
Yeah. I'm curious when you talk about, you know, the worst part of your life being put out there in your work, like you were doing it on a level that was like for your friends or for your friends' friends or for your local community. And then you write a book and, you know, you obscure things a little bit, right? You're writing about your time with Salem, but you're not calling them Salem. Mm-hmm. You're writing about your time with Kanye, but you're calling him the artist, or, you know, you're changing some names and details, but all of this stuff like exists out in the world and you have such a fan base and such an online fan base. And so much of your life is online.
Oh, there's
like,
a Reddit.
That's what I'm saying.
I literally was going to say the Reddit's crazy.
Yeah. Like people pull up, you know,
they're not
scans.
Like right about everything though.
But okay. You want to correct anything while we're here?
No.
But they pull stuff up. Like I was on Twitter randomly, unconnected to this interview last week, and your missing persons poster from when you're a teenager and you run away and you tell that story in the book, but it's like floating, like people have that and it's floating around online. Like, is that hard to deal with? Like as your star gets bigger, there's just more and more eyes on the stuff that you might have thought nobody would ever see.
No, I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh God, you know, cause when you're putting out naked photos of yourself, but they're artsy, they're not porn, but people have a really hard time differentiating nudity from porn.
Right. Especially like stripped of their context.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely never, you know, I don't want to say that I never thought that a wider audience would see it. I just don't. I think I was just so living in the moment at the time, like really like survival mode day by day, that I don't think I didn't go there.
And when people dig that stuff up, like, is it re-traumatizing for you? Can you laugh when you see your missing persons poster?
I'm so like numb to it now. It happens so often that it's not, maybe like in the beginning, I might've been like, oh shit. You know, like my publicist isn't going to like this, you know?
Right.
But now I feel like my fans know my tea and still love and accept me for it.
Yeah, there must be something.
And if
liberating.
Anything, I want them to see it, you know, because when you get to a certain point, people are only seeing like your pop shoots or whatever it is. It's all glitzy and glammy and looks fun and colorful and poppy. And, you know, I still want them to know like, hey, it's not always sunshine and rainbows. Like
look at my old zine that somebody scanned and put on the internet.
Oh my God, don't look at it though. Yeah. But yeah, look at it. Cause you know, you can see there's a real human behind all this.
I mean,
you know?
Your voice. And and one thing I remember in the later chapter of the book where you're talking about the early days with Ye and, you know, Ye calling Mel and the write-up, and then his associate submits a different write-up and you're like, this doesn't sound like me. But that scene to me is very much like, look, I am down to be documented. I'm available. Like the public thinks they know me in an intimate, vulnerable way. But if it's going to happen here, it's got to be my voice.
Yeah.
It can't be your imposition mm-hmm. onto my voice. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think at a certain point, it's like, I'm not going to let you make me sound stupid. You know, like I'll walk away right now.
Right.
Like I'm not publishing that with my name on it. Like just no. You know, it could draw the line somewhere.
Right. We're calling Mel.
Yeah, exactly.
Mel. Don't run it.
And that seems like it's part of that goes back to your point about you're an indie artist. You're not a mainstream artist like that. And you want that full creative control, not people to put.
Absolutely.
To project their version of you.
Yeah.
On yourself. Like, mm-hmm. when do you feel like you fully wrestled back total control of your image? Was it after that paparazzi relationship? After,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because, you know, it was actually a blessing that he came into my life because he kind of like shook up my team in a way where a lot of the creative control was then given back to me. Whereas I feel like for a couple of years there, even though nothing was really going on because it was the pandemic and whatever, but I would still feel this pressure to like pretend to be this like Hollywood starlet that I like wasn't. And I'd get into fights about it and be really upset about it, but then ultimately always concede and like just do what they wanted me to do because it was like easier than arguing. So after he came in and was like, wait a minute, no, f- that, like, I'm going to do what I want to do. But then when he left, it was like, oh, wait, now I'm going to do what I want to do, you know?
Right.
So
you needed that hurricane to blow through to get rid of all the
debris.
Yeah.
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 And then you felt more empowered after that?
Well, then I kind of felt like, oh, my God, the world is my oyster.
Right. You knew you didn't want to be anybody's muse.
No, I'm my own muse. In the same way I'm my own muse, I'm also my own, like, downfall. And because really, ultimately, I can only do what I believe I can do. So when I don't believe in myself, I can't do anything and I'm debilitated. So it's both ways, you know? But yeah, after that, you know, it was like the doors had unlocked and I just had so many more resources at my fingers, more people wanting to work with me, more designers willing to let me close. And then just, it became really fun. And then I had, and then I started to hear this whole thing like, oh, well, she's only like, you know, killing it in the fashion because it's Kanye. And I was like, right. No, these are my looks. I'm putting them together. Mm-hmm. And so then I felt like that was what I needed to push against and prove that no, these are my looks. You know, I'm doing this. And I wasn't doing it before because my team wanted me to just look basic. Right.
Because they had a vision, especially post on God Gems, where they were like, we can push you. We have a trajectory for you.
Which and was all like you the have normal
to do is,
route.
Right. And all you have to do is just play along. Mm-hmm. If you just keep smiling. Yeah. Wearing these looks, you're going to be fine in 5-10 years. You'll be financially fine. You'll have a great career. We did our jobs. Yeah. That's what they're telling you. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of saying like,
it's not me.
Yeah. Just like, we it's just not can't
me.
Do it.
Like,
yeah.
It's just not me. It felt inauthentic and it didn't feel fun. And it's like, I don't want to do anything that isn't fun. I'd rather pack it up and just leave and go do something else.
Do you love video podcasting? Are we getting more for video?
No, I don't think. I mean, maybe. I mean, I loved working with Nikki Takash, mm-hmm. my podcast host, but like it just got to the point where like I do not have time.
One thing that podcast I think was so effective at, I mean, you know, it's funny. We live in kind of like the call her daddy era or whatever, mm-hmm. but
we all live in the shadow.
We're just here, just, you know, this we're daddy to each other. but doing that form of like intimate, vulnerable, confessional podcasting, but not on this kind of like mega level where it's like, oh, we have to get the biggest necessarily A-list mm-hmm. celebrity, but you're doing it and you're saying like, well, this kind of format actually works for like cool girls too. Like, like that to me. Was
no, our goal was not at all to get big celebrities.
Right.
And I think some people on the team that came on the team probably would have preferred that. But to me, that's freaking boring. Mm-hmm. Like, I want Heidi Fleiss. I want Courtney Love. I want Dennis Rodman. I want
all A-list in their own special.
Suzanne Bartsch. I want, like, I just want more niche, more cool, more underground, like more eccentric, more unconventional. I love people that have been canceled. Like, I love.
Who's your favorite canceled artist?
Probably MIA, but we had her on the pod.
Yeah.
Love her. I don't, Grimes, we had her on the pod too. Love her. Like I don't give a shit. Like that's just what I find interesting, you know? And it's like, I'm not going to waste an hour of my life talking to someone I don't find interesting.
Yeah, you want tension. Yeah. Okay. Where does the music fit in? Like who came to you? So you're in the Charlie video, you have the Charlie song, you're at the Charlie boiler room. Yeah. Like, did all of that converge naturally or was this part of the plan?
No, it was super, super organic. I was doing the book tour and I knew I'd have an audience. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the overarching message of my book is like, you can and should do whatever the hell you want. Change your mind, change path, make a detour, make a U-turn, like just up, be yourself, do what you want. And I thought, like, what is the best way to get that across other than to perform a song and like kind of play this, like, I'm in my pop star era now, you know, haha. Like mm-hmm. It wasn't supposed to be like real. So my friend Ben Draghi, who actually lives in my house, has a recording studio on the top floor. And we just kind of sat down for a couple hours, wrote out the song, kind of made a beat together, figured out the hook, the melody. Boom, I left. He finished it. And then I performed it at the book event. And then Charlie heard it. I guess someone that was in the audience put it on TikTok. She heard it. She was having the boiler room event. And it was funny because she texted me like, babe, do you want to come to this event? The boiler room. I was like, yes, of course, I'll be there. And then she texted me again a couple days later. And she was like, we want to play your song. And I thought she meant just like my song, like what's my go-to club song? I was like, what? So I was like, oh, Stiletto Pumps, Crime Mob. And then she's like, no, LOL, your song that you sang. And I was
like, that's
oh,
me.
Stiletto right. Pump. Like I just had forgotten, you know? And
you're doing so much that you forgot you had a pop song.
Yeah. Like I didn't even, and also I just did it as like a fun thing for my like biggest fans that showed up to my freaking book tour and bought a book.
Yeah.
Like it was just supposed to be for them. And now it's kind of spiraled and become this whole thing. But you know, it's like, that's why I always tell people just create art, because even if you don't have a place right in the moment, the opportunity might arise. Even like I wrote a script 7 years ago and we're just now developing it into a movie. So it's like, just do stuff, keep creating stuff because it'll eventually find a home. Making art is like having little babies and then they grow up and they go out into the world and they have their own independent spirit. And they like, you'll be so surprised where they end up when they're out of your hands and like, just keep creating art.
What's your script about?
It's about two girls that accidentally kill their sugar daddy.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's it.
Yeah, that's
it. Is it a drama or comedy is the real question.
It's like a dramatic comedy, I would say.
A drama comedy.
Yeah, there's some thriller-esque part nature to it. It's definitely a very like high pressure, very like, you know, things are happening really fast and mm-hmm. it's kind of kooky and all over the place, but in a good way. Like the anxious girls will love it.
We'll be there.
Yeah. You've recorded more music since the first song?
No. I've been so busy, babe.
Okay. Well, I mean, but month. Your producer, you live with your producer.
And I barely see him. Okay.
It is in a sort of proud lineage, I feel like, of kind of like It Girls making songs.
Or Anti-It Girls.
Anti-It Girls making songs. Are you sort of like schooled in the Paris Hilton Stars Are Blind. Oh my God, I Lindsay love Lohan, that album. Lindsay
okay. Lohan. All right, so we have a little playlist for you.
Okay.
Can we run through a couple of names and just give a vibe? Do you want to hear the songs, or you probably know
them? I will say them, and if I don't know them,
okay, so let's talk Paris Hilton Stars Are Blind.
Okay. This is probably But the Jealousy was a good one, too.
Oh,
Jealousy.
Oh, you like the deep cut.
Damn, deep cut. Jealousy. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many good ones.
Like Paris Hilton to me is sort of like the ne plus ultra of someone in this space making songs that in their specific moment when they came out, people were like, I can't believe this happened. And then 5 years later, everybody was like, well, that was a classic.
Yeah.
That was an absolute.
I have friends whose wedding song was Stars Are Blind.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Okay. So Paris, you're all in on
Paris.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Lindsay Lohan, Rumors.
Not as much of a classic to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
But
we started high.
It's hard to top Paris.
Where are you on the music career of Addison Rae?
Who was at the Boiler Room with
her. Yeah. Obsessed is the big single from last year.
You say you're obsessed with me. So I took a second and I said me too. I'm obsessed with me as much as you.
But to the person who sent me the zip file of all the like unreleased ads.
Oh yeah, we have the leaked.
We have the leak. I got some leaks.
And they're good.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The Reddit is popping.
Okay, yeah. Good. I'm glad. Yeah. I love that for her.
Kim Kardashian Jam. You up on this?
I like it like ironically.
Yeah.
You know what
but
I
you
mean?
Remember it.
Yes.
You
know all my gosh. DJ play my jam. What was it again?
Something like that.
I mean, it's so bad that it's good.
Yes.
You know?
Written by The Dream.
No way.
Yeah. Early. Yeah.
Wow. Yes. I mean, I love everything she does. So.
Yeah. Who can,
she killed
who
can it.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with.
Yeah.
Any of the Farrah Abraham music.
Oh, wow.
That are you up on that?
No.
Just play a little bit.
I'm actually more into her mom's rap career. Did you guys see that?
Oh, is it that older blonde? Older?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's her
That's f***ing crazy.
Just play like All right, 20 seconds of After Prom. It's aging really well.
It's giving Gigi D'Agostino.
I love Gigi D'Agostino. Yeah. It's pretty good.
This goes.
Like, this could fit in the Charlie Boiler Room set.
This could be a 100X song.
It is basically a 100X song.
She was ahead of her time.
Also, this is literally the art my teenage dream ended.
That's art. That's really art.
Shout out to Harry.
That's a masterpiece. I'm down.
Yes.
And the final one, Naomi Campbell.
You know Naomi Campbell had an album?
Love and Tears.
Why don't I
record.
Know this?
Came out in 94?
94.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. I was still a baby.
A full length album. Know. As was I. John was in London.
I was
30.
30.
Married to the kid.
Probably. Shall we play just a touch of Love and Tears?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I kind of like it.
That is a choice.
That is the 90s.
Oh, it's good. This is really good, actually. It's giving me like Madonna, Grace Jones had a baby.
Also, just that aesthetic, like the clean white tank top with the sort of slim jeans and a desert.
Yeah.
Like, can you think of a more 1991 to 1994 aesthetic?
All right, the Renaissance.
Cindy Crawford is watching this and be like, "How come nobody gave me this song?"
Wow. We're bringing this album back. We're gonna get it printed in like limited vinyl edition
me,
vinyl.
You really should. Like the fancy vinyl me please box.
You really should.
Reunion tour.
I'm going to have to like post a TikTok video with this as the sound.
Please do.
And beat you guys to the punch.
That's fine. Because
people need to know.
People need to retweet.
Like, how did I not know?
This our jobs.
I'm really glad we could introduce you to.
I'm going to literally listen to the entire thing. I love Naomi Campbell. She's a dream.
Like just knowing that like all these people who came from outside the music world and one day woke up and said, today is the day. I become a pop star.
You know, I don't know what it is about, you know, because I feel like when you're an artist and you're creative, I think that that got, like you could put a bouquet of flowers in front of flowers and I will arrange it in my own unique way.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's like even if it's cooking, I will make it in a certain way or like a way that is unique to my creative vision. So I think it's only natural that a creative person would try their hand at another art such as music.
Sure. And you don't think it's like offensive to be a dilettante, you know, like, oh, like real, like you were saying, real actresses would be like, can't believe she got that role. Yeah. Or real musicians would be like,
well, then it's like, well, what makes you the real actress? Because you went to acting school. If anything, I would argue that that
makes you fake.
Yeah. Like you tried a little too hard at something that came very naturally to me.
You're like, I didn't need any schooling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Have you heard the remix of Down the Drain that is chopped and shoegazed? There's like a
I've heard
club.
So many remixes. There's so one, I don't know if we're talking about the same one.
There's one I found that sounds like it would be right at home at John and I's favorite goth club, The Castle in Tampa, Florida.
No way.
I don't know if you're familiar, but
strong recommend.
Those boots would do well.
Yeah, like honestly, strong recommend if you're ever in Tampa.
What is it
like,
called? The Castle?
It's called The Castle.
And it's in Tampa.
They have a goth
club.
Okay,
sure.
I don't know the next time I find myself in Tampa.
You'll be surprised.
Honestly, maybe worth a trip.
We'll all go. Yeah. Maybe we book you a show there.
A genuinely incredible nightclub.
I love that.
This version would
go hard.
There. Yeah.
Okay. I had a question because we were talking a little bit earlier about media and like, you know, in the Yay moment, you have this interview magazine moment, but I know the New York that you grew up in, downtown media, whether it's Old Interview, paper magazine, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder, when you were in your teenage years, was there stuff that you found yourself turning to and you were like, that's the Bible of the scene I want to be a part of?
Yeah, there was a magazine called Misbehave.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that was like the only thing I read.
Yeah, shout out Mary Choi, former editor of Misbehave. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one. I feel like that's all me and my friends read was Misbehave.
Great graphics, really great colors.
You were a little too young for Sassy.
Yeah.
Right? And a little too...
Before. You can say old.
No, I was.
I don't care. It's a badge of honor. Right. I love
it. I'm here, so like,
I'm old. Misbehave was your sweet spot.
But that felt like it spoke to you, like,
yeah.
And that was like that early moment where it's like streetwear, hypebeast streetwear culture, but for girls,
like, and drama. And I feel like there was like a little blog section too, where like some of the writers would like write there. I don't know. I can't remember now, but that I remember like every day religiously, like coming home from school and going on Misbehave.
Were there other blogs and as things started to move more online, like were there websites and blogs or social pages that like that you got obsessed with in the same way that really spoke to you?
That was like the only one. I don't think I didn't like really live that much online.
Right.
Like I was very IRL in the streets at the time.
Yeah, you were busy.
I really was.
Like people were posting you on Tumblr.
No, they were.
You weren't posting
like I was
on Tumblr.
All over Last Night's Party like all over all those like party sites. Like I was really just like out.
Your BlackBerry Wi-Fi didn't work downstairs.
My sidekick.
Or whatever.
Couldn't get a signal at Lit.
No, definitely not.
We've talked about some of your biggest moments, but we haven't mentioned the apartment tour.
So we can start in my bedroom, which is the living room. So yeah, I put my bed here in the living room so I could turn my bedroom into a little playroom for Valentino. I know I have that clothing rack there that I really need to get rid of. But anyway, yeah, this is where Valentino hangs out. And this is my nostalgia mirror.
Which I feel like is another touchstone where a lot of people encountered you for the first time.
Yeah.
And
I was not expecting that to be such a big deal.
Yeah. And we're like,
but people that's why it became a big deal.
Surprised and horrified and whatever. Like, there's something really New York about that, right? Yeah. Of you showing around your apartment and how you live and sharing a room.
Yeah.
With your son and your clothes and whatever. Like, yeah. Like what was the aftermath of that like for you?
Well, I think it was actually probably a good thing that I did that because it made me realize that like, hey, like you don't need to be here anymore. You know, like you can afford something better. But I think I just
felt moved out.
Yeah. I don't live there anymore. but it was like, I got comfortable there. And also by New York standards, that's a pretty okay apartment. The location was prime. I had everything I needed at my fingertips. All my friends were in that area and I just, you know, you get comfortable and also it's just so busy and it wasn't really anything I thought about, but I started to feel as I was gaining more like fame that people had this idea of me that was like totally false. Like I was like an heiress or something. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly had to be like, no, I'm literally just like you guys, you know, 'cause I am. I don't know. I think people just, I think it became such a moment because I think people really did have such a false idea of who I was.
But then when they were like, girl, you're in a movie with Adam Sandler, you're like, oh yeah, maybe I should get a nicer apartment.
Right.
But
that's not where I made my money. But it was definitely the starting point to getting more jobs and stuff.
But you upgraded.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it sort of served inadvertently as a way to do the thing that you described very early in this conversation of like right sizing your fame, as it were, and kind of like saying anybody who thinks that I'm out here in the stars in the sky,
like,
I'm right looking at my mice.
I'm gonna walk up with a baby. I put a stroller. I have to say it's a lot of work, you know. But yeah, it was definitely a good stepping stone. And I think also prior to that, I think I was just like, well, I grew up sharing a room with my brother on a bunk bed. You know, I was like, well, he has his own room. Like we're doing great. And I think it was just like that mentality of like, you know, just because you didn't have the ideal situation, like it's okay to strive for more. It's okay to like want something better for yourself. And like, I'm just very humble vibes. Like I don't like excessive displays of wealth. Like I said in that video, like I don't feel comfortable in like a Lamborghini. I don't like, I drive a Dodge Challenger, which I think is a luxury car in my opinion, you know, and
love to rent a Challenger.
Yeah. They're the best. Yeah. Best car ever.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I feel like that's just not what's important to me. Like, I'm not having a measuring contest with people over like all the nice things I have. Like, I don't give a shit.
What?
If that's how people measure their self-worth, like get some therapy.
That or really 10 other reasons to get some therapy. When you think about the evolutions in the city and you think about kind of like what downtown quota is now, and that could be Dime Square, it could be Bushwick, it could be Ridgewood, whatever. Do you spend any time in those spaces? And if you do, does it feel recognizable to you? Or do you think these kids are just on some other thing that I was not on?
It's definitely different than from when I was in my, you know, teens and 20s. Like downtown was still kind of like the hood, you know, like I feel like now it's kind of more like NYU town. Like NYU has really expanded its campus
to Ridgewood.
It feels like one big college campus in a way. And that's great and it's all fine and dandy, but I definitely don't feel like I really like fit in that much anymore.
Mm-hmm. You're like, they're out here calling the West Village just West Village.
Yeah.
Like what is happening?
You've seen that on TikTok?
No.
Oh, it's bonkers.
Like I'm in West Village.
Look at the look of horror on your face.
Yeah. The first time I saw someone do it on TikTok, I was like, I had to be a mistake. You know, it's like you see the first one, and you're like, ah, it's just this one person by the 7th or 9th or 30th.
Wow.
Pray for the youth.
Should we eat a snack?
We should definitely eat a snack.
Okay.
I think after a long, thorough conversation.
Yeah.
Covering a tremendous
amount
of time.
I'm not going
to
lie.
We work up to the snack segment. That's why we don't lead with snack. We end with snack because we work our way up to it.
Okay.
All right. What so we showed you the pantry.
Okay.
And this is what we pulled.
Yeah,
this is what you pulled. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So snack usually a reward at the end of an episode, but sometimes not. Depends on.
Depends. And you have to rate it. That's okay. The other
thing. Oh, yeah. We rate
one
them out of
we
10.
Do 1 to 10s.
Okay. So you pulled limited edition Pringles. These are Thai favorites, hot and spicy grilled squid Pringles. You can start with those. Oh, yeah. And we've got Korean smoked galbi flavor Pringles.
What's galbi?
It's beef, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, galbi okay. is all like right, a, that's fine. A grilled beef dish, I believe.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, smell just first.
Like, yeah, oh yeah, smell. Oh, but smell also test. set our expectations. Like, where are you on Pringles in general?
I'm really not a big potato chip person. Oh,
okay.
I love Cheetos, but okay. I'm not a potato chip person.
All right. What's your go-to snack? Is it sweet? Is it savory? Is it both?
Sweet.
What is it? Like, what's your corner store? What's your 7-Eleven quick purchase?
Your bodega purchase.
I love strawberry Mentos. Oh. I love nice. The Bueno bars.
Damn.
I like the Tony's Choco Lonely bars.
Get up on that.
They're
up on
so that. Good. I like the
Oh, that's
caramel.
The one that's kind of like has the funny writing on yeah, it. They're the like kind of oversized,
yeah.
colorful.
Yeah, okay, I haven't had those. One or two of those a day, actually. Okay. I'm not kidding. Wait,
you got Tony's in the.
You brought our own yeah, snack.
Wow. Okay.
See, I only have like this much left, and incredible. This was like this big this morning.
What flavor is that?
It's the salted chocolate caramel sea salt.
Okay. All right, I'm going to tap in.
All right.
Yeah.
So you don't really buy a chocolate bar,
I prefer milk chocolate. I know it's like déglacé, but I prefer milk chocolate
I
to
like
dark
milk
chocolate.
Too.
Dark chocolate every
but
time.
I feel like hazelnut chocolate. Like I love Nutella.
That's Italian.
Yeah, Italian in me. Yeah, and I like almond flavored things
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I always feel Italian American energy yeah. here on this pod today. Mm-hmm.
I always feel with chocolate, like real serious chocolate people are just like, how could you not like 70% pure?
Yeah.
I'm like, it tastes like tar. Yeah. It literally tastes like sidewalk tar.
There's
like,
some good ones though that aren't bitter and have a lot of sugar in them. And that when they melt, you have to kind of suck on it for a while. But once it melts, it's very sweet. And then it will also give you a lot of energy. Really dark chocolate. If you eat a whole bar, you will be like up.
Can I make a candid confession? I recently purchased dark chocolate mushroom chocolates.
Okay. Wow.
Because I was sort of like, apparently they give energy as well.
And I'm
looking
gummies.
For concentration.
People do like
you do mushroom gummies?
Yeah.
Which ones?
Like a microdose.
They're the Stilo brand, PSILO.
Okay, I'm going to look into those.
They're like microdosing.
Here,
though.
We're going to pass it. We'll pass.
I'm only doing half of this because it's disgusting.
Oh, is it this just the smell turned you off?
I took a little.
You took a nibble?
Yeah.
Smell is
I don't know if it's the
it smells like
I'm
it's
not
been
a big
in
squid
transit.
Person.
Yeah. It smells like it's been in transit for a long time.
And here's what I'll say about the Korean Pringles. It smells like charcoal. So I don't know if the
I don't
but
know
I've
if charcoal's what I'm smelling.
I know, no, I have a different flavor. But I also will say I don't like Pringles in general.
Oh.
I didn't want to say that in case Pringles wants to
sponsor Julia. Pringles sponsor Julia.
You'll take the
sponsorship. We'll take the just not these ones.
just no squid on the rider.
Honestly, a sour cream and onion Pringle.
I love a sour cream and onion.
I get a house.
Or barbecue.
Yeah, a house.
No, but
fire.
Pringles are not, you said you're not a potato chip person. Pringles are not potato chips. You know what I mean? They're like potato flavored chip, potato crisp. It's just, ugh. I don't like Pringles, but I'm going to try these.
Okay, are we
going to
do this?
Yeah,
I think this kind of goes.
Okay.
You want to try the Korean ones?
Wait, how was this one?
It tastes like the meat is overdone. It's very grill-like.
I like this one more, though.
It's very grill-like.
I don't hate that one.
This doesn't smell like beef,
though.
No,
it's
like,
not bad.
It doesn't.
It's pretty good.
Maybe it does kind of smell faintly.
No, it's pretty good.
Wow, the squid one's crazy aftertaste.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I don't know. I didn't love that.
I like both of these, and you'll be surprised to know I like that one more than I like this one.
Wait, and you said this is spicy?
I have like an extreme spicy version.
I can't even
There's
taste
definitely any a little
spice.
Kick.
I cannot
but
taste it.
I wouldn't
kick.
Say it's spicy.
I have extreme spice. Like, I think Cool Ranch Doritos are spicy. You know what I mean? Wow. Like, yeah. So, like, but I might have more of those.
Here's the thing. If I did a blind taste test on either of these, I would have no idea.
Which was which?
No, I wouldn't even know I was eating a Pringle. I don't think I would know what flavor they were supposed to be, like even in the flavor family. Like these are not hitting for me. Like the reason I like alt Doritos, like experimental Doritos or Lay's or whatever, is that like there's always a punch.
Yeah.
You know, these are just like.
They're falling a little
it's
flat.
Just flat.
Maybe they're stale.
It's just flat. It's possible that they're expired. We eat a lot of expired snacks on this show.
This is.
It's a.
We're living on the edge here.
A hazard of the job. All right. Out of 10, Julia, you go first.
I'm going to say the squid was like a 3 out of 10. Okay. And I will say that the beef one, the galbi one, was like a 6 out of 10. Or 7, 6.5, 7.
Okay. I like the squid a little better.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I like the quote unquote spice.
Drag me.
But I don't like these as a snack. I think like I'm going 4 out of 10 on the squid and 2 out of 10 on the.
Oh, wow.
He gets like, vicious.
Yeah. It's not my thing.
How am I coming out?
I don't
know
how Pringles will recover from this.
How am I coming out?
Look, we have to be real. Honest, we don't. Yeah. No spawn.
No spawn. Yeah. How am I the generous person all of a sudden?
I don't know.
I'm going to say the galbi is, let's call it a 4.5.
Okay.
That's and not then, that generous.
But no, the squid.
But you love the squid.
The squid. It's 7 trending upwards. Wow. I'm going to say it's 7. It's trending 7.
Wow.
7 up.
You're going to crush the rest of that can this afternoon.
When everybody leaves, just find me in the corner.
You're getting the crumbs out of the bottom.
Yeah, could happen. What a idiosyncratic end to a lovely conversation. Mm-hmm. Julia Fox.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
This was really fun.
Thank you for allowing us to check off one of the absolute alpha guests that we've wanted ever since day one. Very grateful to you. Until next week, every episode of Popcast Deluxe is at youtube.com/popcast. Every episode of all podcasts is at nytimes.com/popcast. We'll be back next week.
Let's go out with a remix of Down the Drain.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, no, we're going to keep it raw.
Let's do it.